I'm going to go into some concepts of intrusion detection. Originally, Justin Lundy's talk was going to kind of supplant this for me, but I guess he wasn't able to present before me. But I'm going to go into the differences between anomaly and misuse detection and how they differ in terms of what they need or what they require from an intrusion detection system. Knowledge systems and their capabilities, so how knowledge engineering works, different systems including fuzzy logic, neural networks, symbolic AI, and genetic algorithms. Those of you who were here yesterday might recall my talk that sort of went into those. Next, I'm going to be covering some artificial neural network models, including the three main models that I want to present in this talk, one of which is currently used extensively in neural net IDS and others which aren't, but I think could be. Weaknesses in these detection systems, so the kinds of problems that they're susceptible to in optimization, training, and maintenance. And then into attack techniques. These attack techniques are theoretical. They have not been tried. They have not been extensively researched, so you're on your own. First off, with intrusion detection systems. Well, why do we need them? Many hosts do not have sufficient security. Anybody who's ever run an NT network or a network full of Linux machines that are default installs, or you have employees who like to do that, well, you know what that means. You can't trust the host to be secure, so you need to make the network to be as friendly a place as possible for the host. Novel attacks. Often, by their nature, novel attacks are often not patched against on the host, and therefore the vendors haven't been able to patch against them because the attacks aren't known. This makes host security a null opportunity. And finally, evolving exposure and impact, that on any given network, your exposure to attack changes over time. As your company may become more popular or your opinions may become more unpopular, you tend to draw more attention from the community of people who will break into your networks. And those sorts of things create differing threat levels. And as your threat level goes up, oftentimes so does your requirement for security. And host-based security simply doesn't provide that. Intrusion detection generally falls into two different categories, network-based intrusion detection, host-based intrusion detection. Network intrusion detection requires promiscuous monitoring of the network, essentially sniffers, which analyze traffic to determine attacks. Great for monitoring a number of systems. If you have a large network of systems and you don't want to have to go around running software on each of them, or if you have a heterogeneous network, then network intrusion detection is your best opportunity for a centralized intrusion detection system. It gives you a nice place where you can sit down and have all your data in one place. However, it works very poorly on attacks that occur over encrypted channels. That is, if you have somebody executing an attack against a program that's running on one of your servers, is going through an SSL connection, that then, you know, and you're talking about some kind of data attack inside of that, you won't be able to detect that attack because the channel's encrypted. And the whole point of the encrypted channel is that the network is not a place where you can analyze the traffic. It's not useful against attacks against a specific host or internal attacks from somebody who has legitimate access to a machine. It's well accepted in the security community that many attacks occur from within your own organization, and therefore that oftentimes the people have accounts on the systems, and if those people are accessing those systems through encrypted channels like SSH, then your network-based intrusion detection is going to do absolutely nothing to help you. Host-based intrusion detection, much like Marius's Snoopy system, based on the same sort of concept for anybody who was here this morning to catch his talk, utilize certain features of the operating system kernel to monitor behavior of programs that run on the host. This allows you to watch attacks that occur locally on the machine that are run by legitimate users, but requires you to deploy it on every system you want to monitor. Hence, it's nigh on impossible to monitor a large network with it, and it's generally a hassle to monitor from any central location. Along with intrusion detection system differences, you have anomaly detection versus misuse detection. That is, you need to figure out whether or not you're just worried about anomalous behaviors occurring on your network, so things that are just out of the ordinary, or whether you're specifically looking for misuse. For most security administrators, you're looking for misuse because you really don't care if, you know, Joe Blow user at his desk decides to run a different program, but you do care if somebody's trying to break into one of your servers. So anomaly detection recognizes any deviation from normal network behaviors, which gives you a better chance of catching novel attacks because you don't have to worry about the feature as to whether or not something is specifically an attack. You can just use heuristics to directly analyze whether or not something is different than normal. But you have a greater risk of false positives, obviously, because many normal behaviors on a network may set off anomaly detection systems. Misuse detection is much more specific, directly tries to determine attacks, somebody trying to break in. This results in fewer false positives because you're not just being notified of any difference in attack or any difference in traffic. But you're also more likely to miss new attacks that haven't been categorized because you don't know that they're misuse and they'll merely appear as anomalies in most systems. So in most real-world IDS systems, you're talking about misuse detection as your primary goal. And generally, you want it to be a network-based misuse detection system. It gives you the scalability, and it also gives you a good, a relatively good way of managing your threat. That is, you'll catch most, if not all, existing attacks that you know about and that vendors know about. And you'll catch some novel ones that the system has heuristics to catch. These sorts of systems, if they're designed properly, generally when they raise an alarm, it's a good idea to check it out. Many anomaly detection systems do the sort of cry wolf syndrome. They will tell you that there are problems when there aren't, and that creates an administrator who's generally very partial to ignoring the system. That's not something you want in a security administrator. In as far as balancing usability versus threat level, most networks do indeed have a threat level low enough that you don't really need to worry about novel attacks. Unless you're a very high-profile company or organization, you're not going to be getting a lot of very novel attacks being launched against you because the people coming up with them really won't care about you. Require active maintenance. You need to go in there and you need to update them to recognize the most recent attacks. These are, you know, important features. If you don't do that, you're screwed. And if you don't maintain them, it's your threat level or your danger level goes up increasingly with every single day you don't update to the new signatures or whatever else your particular ID system uses. So one possible solution to help us balance the way that we can detect novel attacks in a sort of intelligent fashion is using knowledge systems. Something like symbolic artificial intelligence, which uses a rule-based hierarchy. I loosely define it here as putting most systems that utilize signatures, like many existing ID systems, I loosely classify under symbolic AI because they use symbolic heuristic rules to determine whether or not an attack is taking place. Fuzzy systems are another useful technique, but they have very poor learning capability. Along with symbolic AI, these systems can't learn from experiences that they encounter on your network. So as your network traffic changes, you need to manually update the rules in order to fit the new patterns. Else you'll get more false positives and your administrators will start ignoring the system. The two kinds of knowledge systems that are generally capable of learning from their environments are genetic algorithms and neural networks. Genetic algorithms simulate a sort of Darwinian evolution series in which you have multiple candidate algorithms, an evaluation of fitness towards the solution of your given problem, and a generalized Darwinian model in order to evolve a solution from your initial population. These systems can learn slowly, but their problem space is generally suited towards function approximators and things of that nature, and therefore are generally poorly applied when to the problem of intrusion detection, or in this case, misuse detection. So that leaves us with neural networks. Neural networks use a distributed graph of simulated neurons, which are a mathematical representation of what we know scientifically at this point, the physiological action of a nerve cell, and a set of algorithms so that the network can learn from the data as well as perform recall operations based on certain input characteristics. These systems can learn relatively rapidly compared with genetic algorithms and provide a strong generalization model and decent categorization depending on the particular neural net model you use, which allows us to really apply it pretty continuously to the problem space of misuse detection. So, again, going back to rule-based misuse detection, this is the way most existing products in the current information security market operate. They use things like NFR and other products of that nature use signature-based recognition systems that look for certain patterns which are noted by administrators. Many antivirus programs use the same sort of model. You define a signature, or the company comes up with a signature, one of their engineers comes up with a signature that matches an attack, you have it installed in the system, and now your little copy of the software can detect these attacks. They're generally highly reliable because when these attacks are triggered, or when these signatures are triggered, by and large, it is an attack, and it is properly categorized. So there's very little of that crying wolf, which makes it great for the system, for the administrator who doesn't want to have to pay much attention. They use some minor generalization techniques to allow similar attacks to be generally categorized with other attacks. So small mutations in a virus, small different implementations of an attack will often be categorized together. But as soon as you have a sort of key deviation at around one of the points that the signature analyzes, suddenly now it can't detect the new attack. But these systems are generally useless against novel attacks. If you want to catch something that's never been seen before, there's no signature for it, and it doesn't look like anything else, well, you're not going to see it, and you'll be caught with your pants down. In these systems, the categorization of the attack is implicit in the detection. That is that when the system detects that you're being attacked, you immediately know what kind of attack that is. That may seem straightforward, but you'll see later on that that's not always the case. Neural networks, in the same role in misuse detection, provide a good compromise between threat exposure and manageability for most security policies in the industry. For particularly high exposure sites, you'll see later they provide the false positive rate is too high and various other things that make them poor for really high scale sites. I'm just going to skip that. Artificial nets basically are great at learning, good at generalization, and generally useful for, and are generally the most useful knowledge engineering technique for finding, for detecting, categorizing new attacks on your network. Now some structural minutiae about a neural network. Neural networks are constructed of little mathematical representations or algorithmic representations of neurons. They take an input vector, which I call here X, and a weight vector W. So basically, any given neuron, for every connection it has coming in, has those two vectors associated with the input connections. There's an input function that aggregates those together, weighting the input values by the weight vector. And then usually it just performs a summation on it in order to sum all of them into an aggregate input signal into a single level. That level is then fed into an activation function which determines the state of the neuron. Artificial neurons behave a lot like finite state machines, except they're not finite states. It's effectively infinite states because it's a value as opposed to a direct state. And there really aren't any transitions, so maybe the analogy is flawed. These activation functions can be incredibly flexible. They can be anything from linear functions to sigmoid functions. They can keep track of past values. They can use Gaussian distributions. I mean, almost anything can be used for this activation function. Then, usually, in most neural network systems, the output function is the same as the activation level. So whatever state the neuron computes as a result of that activation function is fed out on the output axon of the virtual neuron. There are three major models that I'm going to cover here. The first of which is called the multilayer perceptron. This was developed at MIT as one of the earlier neural network models. It's used for a lot of applications. It functions very well as a universal discriminator, or a universal approximator. It's very good at taking functions that have a certain domain on the input, so a certain fixed number of input signals, and has a discrete output for every input in the domain. It's a heteroassociative network, which means that no neuron both accepts external input and outputs from the network, so your input and your outputs are disjoint from each other and can only be, and so the inputs can only affect the outputs by going through connections and connection weights. It's a feed-forward architecture, which means that the architecture doesn't reuse the values farther back in the network. Basically, as you move through the network from input to output, it moves in a linear fashion. And all of the training behavior and all the learning needs to be moved out into the algorithm that's used to do your recall procedure and your training procedure, as opposed to having training built into the network. And by and large, multilayer perceptrons have a single output neuron. Essentially, what this means for us in intrusion detection is that it can tell us whether or not we're being attacked, but it can't tell us what kind of attack it is. So these kinds of systems are generally very poor as standalone detection systems and are better used in hybrid systems where you can use these to determine whether or not you're being attacked and then use something like a fuzzy heuristic system to determine what kind of attack it is. The second model I want to cover is the Cohen and self-organizing topological map. It should be topographical. My apologies. This system hasn't been tried, at least not what I could find in the literature, in misuse detection. The MLP is the only one that's been used so far. These networks are also feed-forward and heteroassociative, much like the MLP, but they have multiple outputs. What they do is they map an input vector into an output vector. So they're generally used for what's called vector quantization. That is, when you have a certain number of features, however many you want, 100, 200, certain features of your input value, and you want to quantize that down into a smaller set of features, you use Cohen maps. These allow you to do something like take a packet log that say you come up with 100 or 200 individual features of this, you know, one second snippet of network traffic, and then that can quantize it down into a three-dimensional output space that you could actually display in, you know, on your screen. And through training, you actually can induce the network to categorize similar attacks in geographically similar geometrically similar locations in the output vector space. Yeah. That uses Cohen maps. There are a couple of toolkits out there that are free and available from university research projects that implement these in a sort of flexible way that you can design your own maps. As far as seeing these used in corporate models, I haven't seen it, but I'm pretty sure that they're out there somewhere. But there are three or four open source neural net toolkits, and none of them are really all that good. With intrusion detection? Not with these models. The MLP model has been implemented a couple of times by a few corporate entities. I know a company called Cygent did a good bit of research with the MLP under a DARPA grant for intrusion detection.
Do you know if this MLP model can produce results real time when out of the phase of learning and when applying the model to detect neural
input,
or do they lag?
The Cohen maps.
Not the Cohen maps, because we don't have ideas based on that, obviously.
Oh, you mean the MLP?
Yes.
Is it capable of providing decent real-time information, is what you're asking?
Yeah.
These systems have generally been pretty well applied to determining whether or not an attack is occurring. they can raise red flags to an administrator saying there's some kind of attack going on your network, but generally real time, no lag. I mean, literally the packet data gets fed in as it arrives. Now, on a large network, of course, you'd need to sort of segment it out and run a different copy of the network for each segment just so you're not overloading it. And that's a good idea anyway with any of these network-based misuse detection systems. I mean, being able to localize your attack to a single segment is always a powerful concept and a powerful way to be able to manage your threat. These sorts of Kahonen maps are used a lot in speech and character recognition because it allows you to distill certain input features like different graphical features of a glyph or of some image, and it quantizes them out into a categorization factor that's usually pretty effective. Do you have a question, Wolf?
No.
Oh, okay. I'm looking sure what the... And the third model that I'm covering is a relational Boltzmann machine. Boltzmann machines are what they call associative memories. These are called auto-associative feedback networks, in which neurons both act as inputs and outputs, and in mathematical terms, the graph is fully connected. That is, all the neurons are connected to all the others. This model is closer in terms of topology to a human or to an animal brain. It's got that same kind of vastly interconnected capability to it, whereas the other neural network maps generally do not have that topology. Essentially, what the Boltzmann machines do is instead of quantizing a vector, it converts a vector. So you give an input vector, and then each neuron represents a single feature. So a Boltzmann network with 100 neurons can analyze a 100-element vector. And then you enter those values on all the inputs, and you basically let the network run. Because it's a feedback network, it effectively runs constantly, and you don't need to. And you just have to run your propagation algorithms, and the values just propagate repeatedly through the network. And what you watch for is you watch for all of the activation levels across the network to settle down to stable values. These are normally called basins of attraction. It's much like if you have a galaxy full of black holes and you sort of drop a star in at the edge, and then you plot the star's location in 3D space as it travels around through the galaxy. You get to kind of see it spiral around until it falls into one of the black holes. And those black holes are roughly equivalent to our basins of attraction. That is, our data point, our input vector, will essentially crawl around the map until it falls into the closest hole. Basically, these systems utilize statistical probabilities for neuron activation values. That's the big key in the Boltzmann machine as opposed to other associative memories. And what these allow you to do is use what they term in the Boltzmann machine specification as a temperature. It works like any thermodynamic system where as the temperature is high, the activity level of things is correspondingly high, and as the temperature drops, the activity is generally lower. This allows you to overcome a problem known as the local minimum attractor, where effectively what you want to find at any given time is the deepest hole in which you can fall into. Because that's generally the most established statistical hole that you want your data to be categorized in. And the local minimum attractor problem is when your data falls into a hole, but that hole isn't the deepest one. And what the temperature allows you to do is you basically vibrate the system and your data point can sort of pop out of the hole and fall into a deeper one. It's kind of hard to describe. If anybody wants me to explain it better, just come to me after the talk, and I'll do my best to explain it in more detail. These have really powerful pattern recognition capabilities, essentially because they require very little supervision. You don't train them. The limit of human interaction is solely to tagging those output basins according to the categories you want. And you never have to tell it whether or not you think what it's doing is right or not, unlike the other network models. Evaluation criteria for expert systems in this context generally will falls into generalization and learning. In generalization, you want to basically be able to recognize and categorize novel attacks without having seen them before. and learning, be able to evolve to changing conditions on the network over time, so you don't need to update the system manually. Specifically, evaluation criteria for artificial neural nets in this context is accuracy. That is, that when an attack that known attacks are caught as often as possible. That is, if you if an attack is recognized by a heuristic system, your neural net should catch it too. And that it's resistant to false positive attacks, so that your system can have a relatively high detection capability without warning you about things that it shouldn't be too often. You'll see later that that's a very hard balance to draw. Another criterion is categorization. That is, you want to know what kind of attack has occurred, and you want to be able to illustrate similar attack signatures so you, as a human, can say, okay, we had a new attack launched on us last night at, 11:30 p.m., and it's a lot like this other one. And finally, learning. You want the system to be able to change over time to adapt to changing network conditions. If somebody or if you install a web server on your network, you only want it to warn you a couple of times before it figures out that web server is legit. As far as the individual models and how they compare in these criteria, the multilayer perceptron has very simple algorithms. It's fast. It's easy to implement. It's got strong learning capabilities, and the training set required to teach it in its initial iteration is generally pretty small, relatively to other models. Its main weakness is that it's got very poor categorization. That is, it tells you that you're being attacked, but not how, which makes its data effectively useless, except in a hybrid system where you have an external categorization mechanism. Best used in hybrid systems. The Kohonen maps are slightly more complicated. The training process is a lot longer and more arduous. The learning is a little bit less rapid than the MLP, and the main hook with it is that it needs a much larger training set. You need to feed it a lot more samples before it really learns what it's looking at and before it really learns how to quantize those vectors properly. The advantage, however, is that this offers categorization where the MLP didn't. Now we can see what kind of attack is being launched and compare it to other similar attacks that are close in that have a small Euclidean distance to the output vector of the self-organizing map. These systems aren't used right now, at least not from what I've been able to see in the literature, mainly because this is a pretty nascent field. The MLP being the easiest to implement is usually the first one people try. And generally the people supplying the grants haven't thought that the results have been interesting enough with the MLP to warrant further investigation with the other models. With relation to Boltzmann machines, the algorithms are simple, the training is simple, the learning is pretty rapid, and it requires a very small training set, about on par with the MLP, sometimes smaller. It offers really powerful categorization, but the main problems with the Boltzmann machines are that it needs to be designed very closely, the architecture needs to be sized very carefully. If you make it too small and it tries to recognize too many different basins of attraction, you simply will overload the system and you'll have this phenomenon known as catastrophic forgetting. As I said yesterday, it's a lot like trying to cram in that last chapter of an exam last chapter of a book when you've been trying to study for an exam, and all of a sudden you can't remember what you read 10 minutes ago. It's a very similar behavior. The network basically forgets everything it knows because it can't hold all of the data at once, so it just kind of drops it all out its ears. The Boltzmann machine isn't currently used in any products, but it would be a really powerful methodology for deploy and forget misuse detection, in that the human interaction with the Boltzmann machine is very small. They learn very well on their own with very little supervisory intervention, unlike the self-organizing maps. Yeah?
Okay, so if I wanted to apply this map model intrusion detection, I would have to filter, okay, I'm going to divide all my packets between ICMP, TCP, and UDP-based attacks.
Mm-hmm.
Then I'm going to try to divide that by first dispatching the packet based on its type,
mm-hmm.
proper network, in order to have several networks working in parallel to analyze and not being overloaded by the world that happened.
Mm-hmm.
One map, that's what you're saying.
These, you can either do that or with a lot of these systems, what you can do is you can even have the packet type as one of your features. So one of the elements of your vector will change depending on what packet it is, you know, and that way you don't need to have multiple networks to categorize it. The advantage of what you're talking about allows you to individually train networks based on things that are specific to that protocol family. Where attacks that come up over ICMP, you might need different learning characteristics than attacks that come over TCP. Does that answer your question?
Yeah, okay. I wonder how you would do it. If you were to use that with a sniffing library?
Yeah, I had gotten into trying to implement some of these, but I ran out of time because I had class projects and other things to deal with. Unfortunately, I don't get paid to do any of this, so... Hopefully I will at some point in the future. So essentially, these models are variously useful, different applications. Again, MLP is best in hybrid systems. The SOM and the Boltzmann machines are more standalone, but they generally require more analysis on the output end in order to determine distances and those sorts of things. The Boltzmann machine, I think, has the most potential out of any of these, just because it can be extended to handle a lot of different techniques in misuse detection specifically. It's just a very powerful network design. It's very, very flexible. It's really good at learning. And it's actually the most resistant to some of the attacks that I talk about in a little while. One of the big weaknesses is tweaking high detection rate against false positives. That is that at any given time, you're going to have anomalies on your network because a network is a very dynamic entity. Oftentimes a neural net system that's trained on a network will often detect anomalies where it's perfectly legitimate activity. You have to really toe the line between detecting problems and missing detection on problems, just because as your sensitivity goes up, your false positives go up. Right now, one of the problems with the MLP systems is that you have neural nets that have about an 85% detection rate on attacks coming in, which is pretty poor. If you consider, that means if 100 people attack you, 15 of them are going to get through on the exploit. That's really insufficient. And while only catching 85% of the attacks, it gives you about a 10 to 15% false positive rate. So out of every 100 attacks, about 10 or 15 of them that aren't actual misuse will pop up as misuse and will warn the administrator and set flags going. And being able to toe that – and that's the sort of best compromise that we've been able to find with MLP systems. So it's really relegated neural nets to a place in hybrid analysis architectures. Another major weakness is human intervention. Especially in the Kohonen maps, you need to tell the network whether or not an incoming attack whether its categorization was correct. So when the neural network categorizes an incoming attack as either a misuse or not a misuse, you need to either enforce or inhibit that categorization in order for the network to learn and train based on new data. This is kind of a catch-22 because if it's a new attack, does your administrator really know whether it's an attack or not? And those sorts of interventions are often riddled with problems because you can fool administrators. Especially if your network is constantly crying wolf, the administrator is going to be very apt to click that okay, never mind button. It's really a tough line. I'm going to get into some attack techniques to try and exploit some of these weaknesses. These are theoretical attacks. If you go out and you try and use any of these and you get caught, it's not my problem. If you get one to work, very unlikely that you're going to find a neural network intrusion detection system that these attacks will work against that aren't already hybrid systems, because anybody who's going to be implementing one of these and is so worried about novel attacks in the current information security community is going with any kind of network attack, any kind of way of breaking into a network. And the last one is really relegated to learning and knowledge systems. Generally, investigating 150 leads is going to be very difficult for a security administrator. Staffing with the actual attack and changing certain features of the attack so that if he's deluged with false attacks that you weren't actually using against known attack patterns, and he sees one or two that are novel, or that are not.
Why would one person with a golden bullet or with a silver bullet, like a new attack, which is not detected by IDS,
right,
replace it with other attacks that would be picked up? It would sure attract attention. If he has a silver bullet, he will just apply it and be very still on doing only that.
Exactly.
Yep.
And the problem with the silver bullet theory with neural nets is that the silver bullet theory works great against signature-based IDS. You're talking about an attack that nobody knows about. Nobody knows what it looks like. It can get right through. It's like firing at a chain-link fence with a bullet. Okay, you'll just go right through. But neural nets give you kind of this sort of Kevlar mesh over that chain-link fence that it'll generally catch you with that novel attack, just because they bitch so much that, you know, it'll probably catch you anyway. The trick is getting the administrator to ignore it when it does.
Okay, I don't know well neural network, mm-hmm. so I'll take a practical scenario. Let's say mm-hmm. that I find an RDT in X3, mm-hmm. and that the call 6000, when it's open, I can just send in a real small shell code, mm-hmm. and just go through
mm-hmm.
How would neural network detect that particular attack? Because there's nothing common with those attacks.
I'm not a neural network, so I can't sit here and tell you why a neural net would catch it. But, you know, in response, a possible scenario could be that the neural net will be accustomed to seeing network traffic patterns that don't have X connections coming from outside the network. That's fine, but the neural net will never have seen something like that before. It isn't used to seeing people connecting in or sending packets into port 6000. And so something like that would show up as very highly anomalous to the network, you know. Or the packet size, like your packet, if it's got shellcode in it, generally it's probably going to be under a kilobyte, okay? How big are requests that normally go into X servers? Well, they're usually pretty small. The X packet specification, you're either talking really big packets or you're talking really small packets. Wow. Okay, that was peachy. Okay. You're generally talking either really big packets or really small packets. So those are possible burrs that the neural net can kind of catch on to and notice you. The third approach is really false training. Which is kind of what will allow the golden bullet to get through. And that is, how do you get the network to not think you're anomalous? Now, of course, you think that might be impossible, but there are ways, if you know what kind of model's being used and you know how the features are being analyzed, it is possible to create, to induce traffic patterns in a network that'll fool the neural net into thinking over time that your attack is perfectly normal. And it won't raise any flags, and you get in, and you're all done.
You do a study of the different kind of IDS using a neural net and which use what technique?
No, realistically, neural nets really aren't that far deployed right now. Most of this stuff won't be useful for at least another year or two, at least. So. With attacking MLPs with these?
Yeah.
You mean? And generally they suck. By and large,
why do you believe that?
mainly because people are belligerent and people realize that there's a big problem with signature-based IDS systems, that for the people who really have the high-end threat, they want high-end systems. And there will always be a demand for systems that can categorize and detect new attacks. And right now, neural networks are our most promising avenue, as bad as they might be. You know, you might think, well, okay, with an 85% detection rate and a 10% false positive rate, that's pretty bad. But in the vast scheme of things, when you're talking about novel attacks, if you catch 85% of the novel attacks that come into a network as opposed to 0%, you're still talking about being ahead of the game. So that's where hybrid systems come in. When you can take, a neural net system, like an MLP-based system, plop it sort of in parallel to your signature system. So your signature-based system catches 100% of attacks with a very low false positive rate in the, you know, half a percent range. And then you've got your neural net, which has a higher false positive rating, but can detect novel attacks that the signature-based IDS can't. And then you use something like a fuzzy system outside of that to do things like do more categorization. So if you have two knowledge engineering systems working in parallel, and if, let's say, any two of your three monitoring systems give you a warning, or if both knowledge engineering systems report an error, raise the flag. Those are ways that you can reduce that false positive rating while keeping your attack detection pretty high. So moving on with the source chaffing technique, or did that answer what you were headed for?
Well, what are the weaknesses with MLP? Do you have any idea what MLP is really doing?
The weaknesses with MLP are simply it's great. I mean, the weaknesses are that the training just is, you can only do so much with the training, and you can only do so much with sample data. And because these systems are essentially non-deterministic, a signature-based IDS system is pretty deterministic. You feed in a certain set of inputs, and it'll give you the same output every time. Neural nets aren't like that. They change over time. And so there's really no way to determine there's really no way to guarantee that your output will always be accurate. The research has just shown that the percentages aren't there yet for network IDS. The numbers are getting better. I mean, they were near 50 and 50 a year ago or 2 years ago. And they've found different kinds of heuristics that they can apply outside of the neural net to kind of narrow that gap.
Is it the heuristics that's doing it then?
The neural net is still doing most the generalization part, which is the generalization and the learning. And the heuristics are then just acting as filters. You're losing some of your neural network functionality when you do that, but you're also, you know, creating a more useful output. So, I mean, which is more important? You know, do you want to be a purist with the network, or do you want to filter the output and get your best solution for the problem? I mean, it's a hack, but it works. I already went over these chaffing techniques. I mean, essentially, you want in regular source chaffing, you want to release your attack from multiple locations. They can't figure out where you're coming from. Bam. I mean, that's a standard attack. It sets off all kinds of red flags all over the place, but you're trying to get through in the noise. Mutated source chaffing does the same kind of approach, but you also change the attack a little bit each time. So that way, if it's a novel attack, it'll be harder to derive a signature for the attack for using a signature-based system that will make it harder to detect in the future. Not too useful. Using diverse attacks to create noise to slip in, again, you're going to set off red flags everywhere. But these sorts of systems are really useful against MLP networks, because since MLP networks can't categorize, you set off the alarm, and the MLP will say, you're being broken into. And then the heuristics go off, the other half of your hybrid system goes off to try and figure out what kind of attack was used, and it's going to find one of the obvious ones. It's probably not going to find the novel one that you launched, because the heuristics are probably programmed to be very safe about that and say, okay, well, you know, I mean, you launch 50 copies of some bind attack that you know won't work against the network from, a bunch of other machines, and then you have this sort of new one that you found in X, let's say, coming in on another location. When the heuristics sit there and try to categorize it, it's more than likely going to fall on the bind attack and say, oh, well, this is what they were trying to use to break into you. And because the MLP can't categorize or explain what attack it's reporting, you're relying on the heuristics outside to do that categorization, and then you lose as the administrator. The really good techniques for the other systems where you're taking advantage of flaws in the very basic neural net technique is through false training. And there are two kinds of false training that I'm going to go into. One that works one that would work against self-organizing maps, and the other that would work better against Boltzmann machines and other auto-associative or other associative memories. Statistical distribution migration is what I called it. Would work well against self-organizing maps. Basically, your goal is to slowly induce traffic conditions on the network that migrate from something that is considered a normal traffic pattern. So if you're talking about attacking a network that does a lot of web traffic, start with something that does a lot of web traffic. And let's say you're launching this attack up on, port 133. That's not well known. So let's say there's some new daemon living up there. Normally, your attack would be detected if you just launch it right out. But if you slowly train the network to recognize more ports than just 80, and eventually through migrating your traffic induction higher up and over a wider area of ports, you can actually begin to fool the network into thinking that not only now does the network legitimately have traffic running up on port 113 or on port 133, but that your attack is actually the standard traffic pattern that should be going over port 133. And so then when you launch your attack, the network won't notice it, the administrator won't know, and you're in. Essentially, this relies on the poor human interaction model in self-organizing maps. Because they require supervised training in the learning vector quantization algorithms, you're talking about having a human sitting there at every anomaly and saying, yes, that was an attack, or no, that was not an attack. And if you launch techniques that will induce traffic patterns that are only slightly anomalous, that a poor administrator won't notice, hey, that doesn't make any sense, then you can take advantage of that poor interaction model, set off lots of little anomaly alarms that don't necessarily trigger a misuse detection trigger, and the administrator will be party to your attack. Yeah? Essentially, what neural nets do is, in particular the Kohn maps, is the training algorithms aren't predictable like that. You can't tell how they're going to learn. So basically, the generalization is that when you're dealing with a Kohn map and you're talking about an end-to-end vector mapping, so you have some input vector that's larger than your output vector and you're quantizing it down, you basically want to spread out the distribution in your destination vector space. So as traffic patterns come in, they're going to fall into certain distributions in the output space. And if you're able to spread out those values in the output space and spread out one of the distributions that's already tagged as merely as a non-misuse region, and you're able to force that region to expand through well-placed activities on the input side, then when you launch your attack, you can actually have it fall somewhere inside an existing distribution. Okay? And so the heuristics that sit outside of the Kohonen map that look at that output vector and compare it with other output vectors to figure out whether or not it's an attack. I wish I could turn that off. That you fool those heuristics into thinking that you're part of an existing distribution.
Each
Right, exactly. You run one map that analyzes all features. Exactly. For a lot of different source IPs, and you can create nice, diverse, spread out distributions. As a matter of fact, the more diverse you make it, the better. It'll just take you longer to do it, because the faster you try to accelerate the increasing of the size of this distribution, the more anomalies will show up to the administrator. So that's why I call it statistical distribution migration, because you're migrating that distribution to encompass other attacks that are known as novel, and hopefully then when you launch it, it'll fall under their radar. I'll get into more on it later. Let's see. This other technique is artificial basin creation. This works, or this would work against associative memories. I say unsupervised SOMs, but I'm really not sure about that, so just scratch that from your mind. But this would be pretty applicable against Boltzmann machines, again, with the end-to-end mapping, where you have the sort of settling into the holes. Your basic concept is that you want to create a trough, or you want to create a hole that exists somewhere between where your attack will show up on the input vector space and where it would settle into a basin on the output. By creating a false basin through, again, inducing certain traffic patterns in the network, you can create a hole or create a trough and either have it fall all the way through, so really reinforce it a lot, induce a lot of traffic that uses it, have it show up as a new basin that the administrator will have to tag as being misuse or not. Okay, so that makes the administrator have to tag it. Or you can, if you know enough about the output space to know that that nearby your attack there will be a non-misuse basin, you can almost sort of create an irrigation path of sorts that your attack will fall, your vector will fall into that and then roll off into a non-misuse basin. Essentially not triggering a red flag. This is really dependent on how well you know the network. You really need to know, in order to create these basins, you need to know what those vector spaces look like. Now, you can do that either if it's a commercial product, and you research the product development documentation through whatever nefarious means required, or if it's an open source package that somebody's using, you can look at that map and you can infer mathematically what kind of basins would be created for a certain kind of network. And you can begin to come up with possible attacks. These are all very math-intensive and thought-intensive attack techniques, these false training techniques. You really need to know a lot about neural nets, you need to know a lot about the vectors that are involved, you need to know a lot about what kind of traffic the network normally encounters. If you know those things, you can generally create a statistical anomaly that will allow your attack to fall through the cracks. I was rushing along and now I find out I have more time. Yay! Yeah, go ahead.
Let's say you have two neural networks set up on disparate perceptions. Mm-hmm. They receive similarly traffic, but they're distinct enough to include one or two.
Okay.
One subject is attacked by something unique.
Okay.
How would it be possible with the mapping to share that depth, that unique attack? Mm-hmm.
That's a really good question. There isn't a way right now. One of the major problems with neural networks is that, well, it's an advantage and a problem depending on your application. I'll get to you as soon as I'm done answering this. The neural networks, because effectively the knowledge that a neural net learns is effectively stored in the connection weights of the network. Okay, those are the only static values. Well, not really static, but or they're not constant, but they're static. That is, those values are saved between iterations of the network. Those connection weights effectively become the knowledge base. So currently, one of the ways that neural networks are used in products is you distribute literally the architecture of the network. So you say, okay, this is an MLP with these neurons connected to these ones. And then you can actually sell a set of connection weights as a module that tune that network to a certain condition. This kind of thing is used actively for MLPs in stock market prediction and financial services and those sorts of things. And companies will go out there and they'll literally sell connection weights, just a bunch of floating point numbers that you plug into your network, and all of a sudden now it knows everything that their network did. The problem is that when the networks themselves are disparate, if they have a different architecture, like you have one extra neuron, suddenly those values don't mean the same things anymore. Or if you have one network here, okay, even if on your two subnets you have the same architecture network, the fact is you don't know what each one of those floating point numbers really means according to the system. All you know is that as a group, they represent some knowledge about that network. I'll get to you too, George. So moving that information over is really, really difficult. Now, at least in a direct way. In an indirect fashion, if you have a system that's capable of categorizing an attack, so you see a novel attack, it gets caught. You realize, okay, I want to reinforce this. You can then take that pattern, bring it over to the other network, put it in, and then reinforce the network through a training algorithm to say, okay, you really want to recognize this. Okay, and you do that with signature with attacks that would show up in a signature base anyway. You'd want to especially reinforce those during the training phase, the initial training phase, or during the actual behavior of the network. So that's really the only way to move the data from one to the other. But there's no way to move the knowledge directly out of the network and sort of plop it into the other. And this is a slight departure, but that sort of behavior of a neural net makes it really, really useful for things where you want to recognize something, but you don't want to have that something in a place where it can be read by others. Like, let's say you have a fingerprint recognition system, and you don't want to have a database of fingerprints. You can create a set of connection weights for everybody's for each fingerprint you want to recognize. Okay, and you do that by training the network with that fingerprint. But then you take the fingerprint away and you're left with these weights that mean some arbitrary value. And you can then use those connection weights as your new pattern. And you never again have to go back to that original fingerprint. So you can create sort of zero-knowledge database systems for recognition, which saves a lot of problems with privacy with biometrics, where you generally need some kind of a generalized matching algorithm, but people are very concerned about where to keep them. You can use neural nets, and until somebody figures out a way to reverse the process, which I know there's been thoughts about it and there really hasn't been any progress on it, and I'm sure some mathematician out there might come up with some interesting way to back the information out, but as it stands right now, there's no way. So that's an important implication to have, you know, sort of zero-knowledge recognition systems. Evil? Okay. Wow, great. That was easy. Hold on a second. Okay, so going over the attack techniques. Basically, all the obfuscation techniques, they set off alarms. They're going to warn somebody. The big key is whether or not it'll be ignored or whether or not you'll be noticed in the noise. I make an analogy here to raiding a castle where you go in there with a battering ram and basically, you know, you've got sort of this large siege force and you've got your little scout who runs in to poison the king. Hopefully in the massive siege, they won't notice the little scout sort of running in through the basement. The other techniques in statistical migration and Bayesian creation, they're silent. The administrator, by and large, doesn't know you're there. He might notice some of the anomalies earlier on when you're trying to create the false training data, but generally by the time you actually launch your attack, he's already forgotten about you. This is the really tough part here is that you really need to know the architecture of the neural net that they're using. You need to really know how it's being trained, the kind of traffic that exists on the networks. This requires a lot of research. And the problem is that generally with networks that are this well protected, you don't know all of that. So it's either educated guesses or other approaches, which I have no concept of. So as I say here, it's a lot like sending in your assassin without a map. He has to go in there and kind of feel his way along the walls and hopefully find where the king sleeps. Let's see. Keep moving here. I apologize for this being in Netscape, too. It makes the window really too small to see. But. So some general conclusions with this. Neural networks and intrusion detection and misuse detection in general, it's still really nascent. The research has been minimal. There are a lot of papers out there of people saying, well, we should try neural networks, but there aren't a whole lot saying, we got it to work. There have been some companies that have, and they've locked up all their research in little patents and other sorts of wonderful intellectual property agreements that prevent it from being really useful to anyone but them. So with that comes the implication that most of the interesting stuff being done with this, as far as the academic community is concerned, quite frankly, academics don't care about computer security generally. You're not going to see degrees you're not going to see PhD degrees in computer security anytime soon at the universities in this country. And existing academic programs don't really train people very well to deal with these sorts of issues. So the research isn't in the academic world. It's all in the commercial and government world. And companies and governments are very unhappy about sharing what they find out, as I'm sure you're all intimately familiar. And we'll be learning more about how to get those sorts of things out of companies and governments later in the social engineering demonstrations. But neglecting that, or passing over that, I mean, this research has been the interesting research and the interesting applications of this stuff have been by companies and governments. So the only place, and academics won't touch it, so the only place left is for hobbyists. So any of you who are interested in this stuff, by all means, go out there, buy books on it, look at websites, look at news groups. I mean, this stuff has been being developed for years. There's all kinds of information out there. Go out there, look at it, screw around with it. Your brain is as good as everyone else's, if not better. So take advantage of your position where you don't have to deal with companies saying that what you discover on their time is their property. So the current neural net research puts us in a place where neural nets are really only useful in hybrid systems. Again, where you've got somebody else doing the categorization, and you've got multiple different knowledge engineering systems to do your work. The attack techniques, again, since the neural nets themselves aren't researched extensively, therefore they're not deployed extensively, therefore it's nigh on impossible to even test these attacks, let alone in a controlled environment. Realistically, though, neural network attacks these attack methodologies put you in a place where novel attacks are the only ones worth using. If you're using a known attack, you're going to get seen. Okay, that's been something with IDS for a very long time. People who try to attack IDS systems are generally considered as somewhat psychotic and having death wishes because if there's an IDS system on the network, you'll probably get noticed. So only novel attacks are even worth giving a shot, and even then, most novel attacks will probably get caught anyway in the net of dragnet of a neural network system. And even more so, making these attacks go through safely and go through quietly requires really extensive knowledge and really extensive research of the network you're attacking. Questions? Anybody, please.
How are the initial neural networks set up and trained?
Okay. Generally what happens is most of these neural network models, as they're defined in papers by academics who have come up with them for things much disparate from intrusion detection, they come up with certain guidelines by which to create your network. That is, depending on how many features you want it to learn and what kind of outputs you want it to have and all these sorts of other things, those parameters govern how big you make your network, what kind of network you make it. As far as the training, you generally accumulate what you call a training set, which is a collection of inputs and outputs. Now, this is true for heteroassociative networks, things that aren't those associative memories that I was talking about, like the Boltzmann machines. Those have a completely different learning model. Generally, with a neural network, you have a recall model and a recall algorithm and a training algorithm as two separate pieces. So what you do is you use the training algorithm to take the network and educate it. So you feed in input values, see what it thinks. So at the first part of your iteration, so you do this in a nice big loop, you feed in your input vector or your input value, and you get out some output value. You then compare that with what your expected or your desired output value should be. Then, depending on the network type, you'll have a different training algorithm. With the MLP, those algorithms generally fall under what's called the Hebbian learning law. I don't know a whole lot of the details about it. Any decent neural networks book will cover it pretty extensively, how to implement it. There's a lot of math. But effectively what it does is it reinforces your desired value. And what it does is it backpropagates using it. The Hebbian learning law is used in what's called the backpropagation algorithm, which is a training algorithm for MLPs. And it starts at the output of the network with your desired value, and then cranks its way back, adjusting the weights on the inputs of every neuron to make the output value more closely approach what you want it to be. All the other and different networks have different training algorithms. The Cohen and Maps use LVQ1 and LVQ2 are the names of the algorithms. And that's how you teach them. And then your recall algorithm is just that. You feed in your input value, and it generates an output value. So generally, in non-associative non-associative networks, you your actual detection phase would consist of first issuing a recall operation to see whether or not you recognize an attack, and then that would be followed by a training cycle that would likely be supervised, in which you enforce or inhibit the decision that it made. Does that answer what you were looking for, or? It depends entirely on the model you're using. The training sets are determined from real world data. So, you know, your training set for something in an IDS would be your feature vectors for a number of known network attacks. And then your outputs are whether it's an attack or not. And so you generally start with some huge list of attacks and their expected outcomes, as well as a bunch of normal network patterns that the neural net would encounter on your computer network, and label those all as non-attacks. And generally you want to get the percentages about the same as they would appear in the real world, because then the system will learn the best. Because then it'll really be accustomed to sort of your network or your network behaviors. And then once you have those weights, you can, you know, from your training set, you know, so you do a whole bunch of training runs right at the beginning with your training data set, and then you let it loose on your network. Okay. Any other questions? Anybody? Bueller? Okay. Let's see. Well, then I'd like to take this opportunity to do my shameless, unprofessional, personal plug. I'm headed back to Boston at the end of June, the Boston area. If any of you have connections back that way, especially in the IntroSec community, let me know. I'm looking for a job. I'll be graduating from college with a degree. So, yeah, that would be nice. Be quiet.
It's not a real degree.
Yes, it is a real degree.
It's not a real degree.
If you want me to explain why it's a real degree, talk to me after the demonstration. And it's got my PGP key up there. And yes, it's a PGP 2 key. I'm all for backwards compatibility and loose licenses. And that's it. So if anybody wants to talk to me, come on up. Otherwise...